This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, any place, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, welcome back once again. Yes, it's that all-important time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. I'm Aaron Camaro, joined as always by Chris Sinzak, and man, we had a lot of fun last week.
Woo. Yeah, after listening to it, I could remember some of it.
Me too.
That's a trip. But yeah, thanks, Luke, for coming on. And
amazing
it was
the things you'll find in the refrigerator, the mini fridge at SiriusXM.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we get to come back and do it again. And yeah, a lot of people had some really fun comments on it. And, you know, a lot of people said, can't wait till you guys do part two. So we'll have to have Luke back on to do part two for that.
Yeah, we'll do part two and we'll exclude, you know, anything we already picked will be off limits. So part
sure.
two will be what's left.
All right, let me go ahead and get Geeks of the Week in. And then we have a couple of presents we have to open up real quick from listeners and contributors. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's not even Christmas time yet. So let me bang this out. These are the people that shared on Facebook and retweeted on Twitter the recent episode that we did with Luke Carl. Chris Karam, Todd Cunningham, Matt Ashcraft, David Alpazard, Jason Bakken, you'll be hearing about him in a minute, Warren Money, Derek Novak, Matt Bradshaw, Mike Blunt, Joe Royal and Lee Maslin of the Audio Junkies podcast, The Riff of the Day,
cool.
Brent Walter, Steve Langenbrunner, Joe Lescon, Shane Hebert, James Brendan Dunn, Matt Severson of the Paperback Rocker podcast, Brad Kalmanson, Billy Hardaway,
my man,
Andrew Jacobs, Jody Havnot of the Strange Ways podcast.
Heck yeah.
Chad Pollock, Jeff Davidson, sorry.
Catch your breath, man.
I know. Mike Stewart, Lee Shimbri, also Andrew Babcock of the Hair Metal Mansion, Rodney Dixon, JTB's Groovy Record Room.
Right on.
Had a lot of shares this week.
That's awesome.
And then as far as retweets goes, Music Mags and Wax, Derek Novak, Dr. Metal. Collins, Sleaze Rocks actually retweeted the episode.
Right on. I love that website.
Anya Sputnik. That's an awesome name.
That is cool.
Retweeted it.
It's naughty.
Cool Daddy Dyson retweeted it. And last but not... And Emily... Oh, gosh.
There you go.
Sicantano? Sick... I don't know. Thank you.
Sicamacaninco.
And Killer Dwarfs retweeted it.
Oh, awesome.
And also, more importantly, Luke Carl retweeted it. So
yeah, he did.
You.
I knew he would.
Yeah. So if I missed you, please let me know. I apologize in advance. And that's how we get the word spread out. That's how the fan base grows every week is because of you guys.
Yeah, and we appreciate it so much. And we appreciate Luke Carl coming on this show and his mustache.
Yeah.
The Reverend is the man. He's so awesome.
He is. Loved having him on. Okay, so we've got a couple of gifts we want to open.
Okay.
One I opened earlier in the week, and then I showed Aaron. Lee Maslin of the Audio Junkies podcast sent us a bunch of cool stuff over, some of which is at my office right now. I didn't bring it home. But we got business cards. We've got a band called Shanks, a 45.
Right on. I remember those.
And another 45. It looks like it's a double band thing with Okay, I'll just name off Public Animal. Aaron, you name off the other band.
Sikaminkadinko?
Yeah, yeah.
No, Moko Mokai.
Moko Mokai. And I'm not sure if these are things that Lee worked on. They're both from Squirt Gun Records, so I'll have to...
But the cool thing about it is the back of the album, the way the writing is and the purplish hue to it all kind of gives me that, reminds me of like Creatures of the Night a little
bit.
Yeah,
and I didn't think about that until you said that, but now that you mention it, it does look a lot like that.
That's so pretty cool. We'll have to take a picture of it or something.
And our new writer, Baco, had...
Baco!
He sent Aaron and I both separate packages. I already opened mine, so Aaron's going to open his right now because I wanted to save it for a surprise. I couldn't wait. I'm the bad kid on Christmas
morning. Heavy.
So what do we got here?
Oh, man, there's a bunch.
And Baco is a member of the band Jesus Chrysler.
Oh, I love that name. Is this a little... Wow. We'll save this for when we talk to Gary Corbett. That's a little bottle of Crown Royal.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, geez, what else?
You already won points with Aaron for that.
Of course. What's Makes this? For better interviews. Jesus Chrysler t-shirt. That's very cool.
It's a really cool logo.
I love the band name, too, man.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It's a cool name.
It looks like there's a stack of CDs in here. Oh, somebody's trying to get me to do another Camaro's Cuddle band.
Yeah, I think so. Or a featured artist.
Yeah, there we go. I got CDs here by Jesus Chrysler. Jesus Chrysler.
Jesus Chrysler. And not, Jesus last but not Chrysler. Least, Jesus Chrysler.
Wow, man.
So the whole Jesus Chrysler collection here.
Dang, I guess. And there's a lot of songs on each one of these.
Yeah. So... Baco, thank you so much.
Baco's been around for a while doing this, I take it.
Yeah, he knows.
This one's from 2002.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
Nice. I can't wait to check these out.
And Baco, I know you're listening to this. Remind me, did you guys show up on a Nashville rock music compilation? I know you're not from Nashville, but I swear that band was on a compilation that my old band was on, or one of them that came from the Nashville rock scene when I was in that, because I swear that name, I know that name going back
stands
a long
out
time.
To you.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, you got to believe a name like that. If you heard it, you'd remember it. So we're gonna check it out, and
yeah,
man, who knows, we might become the biggest fans of this band ever.
We might,
like, we'll stop doing references about Kiss and just start talking about Jesus Chrysler all the time
as soon as the action figures come out.
Awesome.
We'll do that.
Can't wait. In the lunchbox,
the Jesus Chrysler casket and condoms spelled with a K.
Of course.
Oh, God. Okay, so we got all the business out of the way, right?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Long-anticipated return of Gary Corbett today.
Yes. Man, we love Gary Corbett so much, and we know that he is our most popular guest that we've ever had on this show.
By a long stretch.
By a long stretch.
Yeah.
Like, towers above the rest.
Yeah.
Even our most people that you look back, we've had a lot of popular guests.
Yeah.
People that you think would have, like, our highest numbers. Not even close. Pale in comparison with Gary Corbett.
Yeah, ahead of all the Vinnie Vincent specials and everything. Yeah.
And I just got to assume it's because Gary Corbett is such an awesome dude and so much fun to talk to.
And it's slightly raised by a certain retweet from a certain member of Kiss with a star over his eye.
Oh, no. I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, no. A podcast. So, yeah, Gary's well aware of that, too, if you're wondering. And, you know, and we're not rehashing all the Kiss stories from before.
No.
Gary is a keyboardist first and has a long history with it and is a fan of keyboard players. And this was partially his idea when the last time we talked to him. Was like, let's do a keyboard episode.
Yeah, because as soon as we were done talking to him, you know, we thought we were getting one episode. We ended up with two. And because he was such a joy to talk to and so much fun and full of so many amazing stories, that as soon as it was over, it's like, we got to figure out a way to get this guy back on. And right away it came up was, well, let's do a keyboards episode.
Yeah, and now for those of you Kiss fans, you will not be disappointed, though.
Oh, absolutely.
There is one story in this conversation that I don't think anyone's heard before.
No.
Regarding the Hot in the Shade tour. And a let's just say a technical malfunction.
That is
so funny.
You guys are all, whether you're Kiss fans or not, going to love this conversation so much. And as soon as we got done talking to Gary, we were already thinking about ways to get him back on. But
for now,
you're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, enjoy this. This is our talk with Gary Corbett about keyboard players. Topic of Kiss, and I was going to dance around the room like the Ice Capades, like Gene did, but decided not to. We've been wanting to have you back on for a long time because, you know, you're a keyboard player, and we wanted to talk about, we've never done a show on keyboard players, and we thought,
it's about time.
What better way to represent that than with you here? So, we kind of just thought we'd go through some famous keyboard players, and you've got some that are your like your top five, and we'll just kind of go around the room and talk about keyboard players. And before we get into things, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You are our most downloaded guest we've ever had on the show.
Most definitely.
And
I'm honored about that. I think.
Caused a few waves when that episode came out.
I assure you, it's a great honor.
Yeah. Yes, it is. If you want plenty of Kiss Talk with Gary, go check out parts 1 and 2 of that episode. I'll put the links for that in the show notes.
Awesome stuff.
But Gary is a fantastic keyboard player, and we wanted to have him on to talk about this because we've never really delved into the subject. So,
I always kind of, and we talked about it when Gary was on before, the old ice capades, and to be honest, before we started doing this show, I never thought keyboards were very cool. But through doing the Decibel Geek podcast, I've come for a whole new respect for the man behind the keys in some of these bands.
Yeah.
Because, I was always, I was an Ace Frehley guy, a kid growing up, I was rock and roll, I'm on big guitars, loud distortion, giant Marshall amps, and there ain't a whole lot of room for everything else, but you squeeze it all in there, it sounds good, but I always thought keyboards, man, songs, but like I said, there's some great stuff, and I gotta admit it,
He admitted it. Well, I'll tell you, it's all about the sound, of the keyboard, you gotta go back to the early rock stuff, not talking about 80s rock. Let's go back to the 70s rock stuff, like the Hammond organ guys, Mountain or was Felix Popolardi. I mean, you ever listen to Mountain, like Mississippi Queen?
Yeah.
The album that came from, Mountain Climbing. There's a song called Never in My Life.
Mm-hmm.
The organ sound in that song is like a guitar going through a Marshall. It has as much balls as that. And it's the keyboard sounds that came after that screwed us
over. I get it.
Like the wimpy.
But I was kind of a fan of some of that stuff too, which we'll get into.
Yeah. It has its place.
I had a fascination with some of the wimpy stuff too, though.
Well, so I guess if we look back to the very beginning, I would think, in my opinion, the very first guy to really rock and roll on the piano, it's probably Jerry Lee Lewis. I think that's got to be where rock and roll keyboards truly begins.
Right. But as far as like heavy metal and leaning towards that stuff, for me, the first heavy metal song with organ, where the organ really is as much a part of it as the guitar, would be Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Magic Carpet Ride.
It's got a whole keyboard solo in the middle of it.
And the sound of the organ is definitely not wimpy.
So was that a Hammond B3 playing on that?
Yeah.
That was kind of a signature 60s sound.
Well, there was no other choice. There were no synthesizers. You had a piano, which had all kinds of limitations because you couldn't be heard over a band.
Unless you're Jerry Lewis and bang the shit out of the keys.
And you're the star because you're the artist. And you have to mic the piano.
Right.
But if you're just in the band and you play the piano, they're not going to mic it.
Right.
So
who made you want to start playing?
The Beatles, oddly enough.
Really?
Yeah. It was the Beatles that definitely made me. And then the Dave Clark Five. They were the first British invasion band with a keyboard player.
Yeah.
And a lot of people overlooked that band. They talk about back then, they talk about the 60s, but you got to think of how many huge hits that band had.
Absolutely.
Oh, they were incredible.
And also, we talk about heavy.
They were like a heavy metal band.
The sound of their records was so energetic and you felt like you were in a party.
Yeah. There's some of their songs. It sounded like the whole thing was just going to fall apart any second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were probably the heaviest of all the British invasion bands.
Yeah, they were. And Dave Clark's still doing it, too.
Amazing. I just heard a documentary on him recently. And apparently, he had a whole Broadway career producing Broadway shows in the 70s and stuff. And
really did well for him. My father's not around anymore, but he was huge into that British invasion stuff, and he was a big Beatles fan and Stones fan and everything, and I would get into that stuff through him because he'd give me these old songbooks because he played in bands too, and I remember one day he's like, Beatles and Stones are cool. He's like, but you need to listen to this Dave Clark 5 stuff.
Absolutely.
And he turned me on to that, and he was just like, listen to how intense that is.
And that's how it was a Vox Continental. That was a Vox organ.
Right.
And the thing that was cool about those organs, when you used to see those guys on the Ed Sullivan Show, was they had these really cool silver chrome legs that were like Z-shaped. And
right.
The white keys were black and the black keys were white when you looked at the keyboard on that organ.
Nice.
And so it was really badass looking.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a heavy metal organ.
Yeah,
I've never seen that.
That's cool. Sweet.
And it was one that I never had as a kid because I was only 5-6 years old when they came out.
So how old were you when you started playing?
4.
4?
Yeah.
So piano lessons from the parents?
Yeah.
Forced on you?
No.
You wanted to do it?
Wanted to do it.
Okay.
Wanted to do it.
So mom and dad were encouraging with...
Yeah, supportive. Yeah. Definitely supportive.
I suppose, you know, it's not like he's trying to play drums. Or, he's a rock and roller in disguise, you know. Secretly, he's learning how to play.
Well, my dad was a huge Jerry Lee fan.
He was.
Right.
Yeah, that was, so, like, when I come home from my lessons, after I got through practicing whatever I was supposed to practice, my dad was always trying to get me to do the Jerry Lee thing.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, you got a cool dad. Yeah. Like most parents back then were like, leave that rock and roll alone.
Well, no, my dad was my dad used to drive me. As a 8 years old, 9 years old, he used to have to get me to band practice. You know,
sweet.
I couldn't carry, he would carry my organ. He was my first roadie.
That's
my first tech.
Oh, so nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
And he, believe me, he hated it. He did it all the way up until the time I had a double keyboard organ with a Leslie.
Oh,
and he used to tie his trunk of his car closed with a string because it wouldn't, you know.
So you worked your muscles at an early age lifting that thing.
Well, his muscles.
Yeah. You lift it, Dad. I'll just ride.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Pretty much. So, yeah.
So the Beatles stuff really got you going to begin with, Dave Clark.
Yeah.
So you were normal rock and roll child of the 60s,
yes,
British invasion.
Absolutely.
You know,
waiting for Ed Sullivan.
That's what I want to do for a living.
Absolutely.
So you did see the Beatles.
I remember them on Ed Sullivan.
So envious of anyone who got to see that.
I was born in 58, so I was already, you know, old enough to... And then plus, I was already playing the piano, so I cared about music.
Yeah.
You know, so it mattered to me. Every Sunday night... Yeah, and there was always somebody on after that. So,
but was there a lot of build up to? There had to have been a lot of build up to them coming on that show. I mean,
yes, there was. But and you know what? It was. I remember during the it was like a summer month because I used to spend my summers outside of the city, up in the in the Catskill Mountains, upstate New York, and where we spent our summers, we didn't even have television,
right?
And you know, so like we did our summers kind of roughing it. And so to watch the Ed Sullivan Show, we had to go to somebody else's house.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, it was a group event of everybody that was at that, you know, resort being in this one person's house.
And it was every bit as mind-blowing as it's described.
Yeah.
I've heard it, like, society changed overnight after that.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's crazy. Nothing today could ever top something like that. Because there's too many channels.
Yeah.
Back then, everyone watched the same
Absolutely. There's so many places to get information
now. Oh, yeah.
Now,
nothing
crazy.
Will have that impact again.
No.
So you saw something special.
Yeah.
Okay, so what, did you get into the prog rock thing right after that? Or
eventually I did, absolutely.
Were you into a lot of the psychedelic stuff?
Yeah, the Doors. Ray Manzarek?
No. Anything but.
Ray Manzarek. I love the Doors.
No, that's not one of my favorite. As a matter of fact, people. Yeah, no, I'm not a Doors.
Really?
It's a different style, or you just didn't like it?
I don't find any. There's nothing about it I like. I don't know. And there's a couple of bands like that.
Yeah.
That where like when they come on the radio, I have to change the channel.
Is it not enough hooks for you? Because there's not a lot of hooks in Doors music.
No, I think it's the sound of the organ. I can't stand.
Yeah.
You
really
can't stand that organ sound. It sounds like a circus music to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I, while I appreciate the fact that he's a left-handed keyboard bass player, there's a reason why bands have bass players.
Yeah.
Right.
It's called feel.
Yeah.
You know? So there's a lot about them that I don't like. And I was never a Jim Morrison fan, sorry.
Right.
To say.
Yeah.
That's why overrated.
You're a wild guy that writes poetry. Good for you.
Yeah. Hey, at a time when, everybody was buying it. It was great. And you know.
No, I had a good year that I was obsessed with the Doors. And I loved everything about them. And then for some reason after that year I just stopped. And
they were fascinating for a little while, and then after a while, I was like, well, I'm going to go back to guitar stuff. I just didn't, like, Robbie Krieger's good, but it just never clicked all the way.
It didn't hit the right buttons.
The movie, though.
The movie, Phil Kilmer did a great job.
Good job, Oliver Stone. Well, I'll interject real quick with one of my picks. You know, we're not going in any order. We're just bullshit.
But
Matthew Fisher from Procol Harum. I think
absolutely.
A Whiter Shade of Pale. I think is one of the greatest songs ever written.
That
is a timeless song, and yeah, you can tell it's from the '60s. But it still evokes so much emotion even now. Although, and I tried to make it more palatable to our audience. I played the Doro cover of it, which is good, too.
There you go. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good. But talk about a keyboard part that is eternal.
Yes, absolutely. Classic.
That keyboard line is great. And it evokes emotion. So.
And again, that's organ.
And I don't know any other Procol Harum songs. But that one's good enough for me.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, but they were a little esoteric kind of.
Did you listen to them?
Yeah. There was every once in a while they'd come out with something that was really cool.
Yeah.
But
that song really was.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
where you came from. You know, that's quintessential '60s organ classic right there.
And every now and then I'll post the song for that from YouTube on my Facebook wall, and I'll inevitably get a handful of people that'll say that like. Some people even say that song brings them to tears. Like, it just does something to people.
That's the organ equivalent of Stairway to Heaven.
It kind of is. Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, I'm sorry for such an obvious pick. But it's, because does keyboard shops have a no Procol Harum sign? No Whiter Shade of Pale allowed in this store.
No, because, still, if you could play it, you still get it.
Right. I'm sure it's not a hard line to play, is it?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
No, but it's just
gotta
so...
have the emotion. Though.
But that's a Hammond B3, too,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes.
And the Hammond B3 is going to come up throughout this talk, I have a feeling.
Absolutely.
Because it was...
Well, without it, I mean, that's really what... That's the instrument that... allows a keyboard player to stand on equal ground with a guitar player.
Yeah.
That's the only... And it's really... That, maybe a Wurlitzer or electric piano.
Right.
Or clavinet. There's really no other keyboards that can do it.
Casio?
Depends on what kind of band you're in, you know.
Yeah. If you're a Devo, it works. But.
Although I did use Casio samplers when they made them. They were good samplers, but...
Oh, okay.
That's what I used to use with... You know who?
Oh, yeah. With them. Yeah.
We were both at
They
the
want
age
your samples. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll listen
we
to the other episode.
We were at the age where we actually had the little Casios when we were
Casio ones.
Yeah. I would write songs through those.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they
also had
fun.
The dual drum machine on
that's
them.
Right.
I would set that to 4/4 time and just go to town on it.
And it was like $200 when it came out, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Those were a fun little toy, those.
Yeah. The Casios were great for my age group because it was like, it was accessible music.
Yep.
I learned how to play Let It Be on that old Casio keyboard.
Like, I learned how to play the intro to Home Sweet Home.
Oh, yeah? And me too. Yeah. I was like, wow, Tommy Lee's an amazing writer.
I think that's the keyboard song that's where they put the sign up in the store, none allowed.
Yeah, like no
that.
Home Sweet Home.
No Home Sweet
through
Home.
All through the 80s, no Home Sweet Home.
Yeah.
Enough of that shit. But so, yeah, Procol Harum, Matthew Fisher, you know, good on you for that. So, yeah.
Right on. So you talk about being into the Beatles and the Dave Clark Five. What about the Beach Boys? Does that fall in line with the Doors? I'm not a big Beach Boys fan, but I gotta understand Brian Wilson.
Yeah. They were kind of like, they were around before the Beatles.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they were cool in that. And plus, you know, they were also on the Ed Sullivan Show regularly. So that was also a good Sunday night if they were going to be on.
Well, that Pet Sounds album.
Well, but
that really took them to another level, right?
Yeah, well, that was Brian Wilson's response to Sgt. Pepper.
It was also him losing his mind.
Right.
But it came at a price.
Yeah.
But it was... when that came out, people must have been like, what the fuck? They're like, this is a complete left turn from I Get Around and Help Me Rhonda and all that. So, yeah. I mean, like, I never took them... When I was a kid, all I heard was that classic stuff. Where, you know, be true to your school and all.
Yeah,
and I'd be like, this is the lamest stuff I've ever heard. And then a friend of mine was like, you haven't heard Pet Sounds yet.
Yeah,
and he played that
cool.
for me. And I'm like, wow, this is really impressive. But,
that's a great piece of work.
But and then Charles Manson, The Lost Beach Boy. But Yeah. That's a story. We do a whole show on that.
Yeah.
But so you weren't big into them at the time?
They just were. I mean, they were always around, but it wasn't. You know, that was the California scene. Pretty yeah. much.
Right. Yeah,
which you grew up on the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah. And I was, you know, and for me it was, but once the British invasion thing started, it was all about that.
Right, it just took over America.
What grabs you next?
Deep Purple.
Yeah, John Lord.
Probably the ultimate of everything.
Absolutely, ultimate heavy metal keyboard player. Even then, I mean, once he came on, to my attention was there. That's pretty much it, really.
Yeah.
As far as organ playing guys that stand up to guitar players.
Oh, him and Blackmore together. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All
the way through. I mean, even when it changed to synthesizers or added synthesizers in the later days, he still managed to sound like a man.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you watch that old footage of him playing. I mean, he's like beating the living shit out of that organ. I mean, mm-hmm. just, and the like, Highway Star is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ferocious sound.
Yes.
It's like you say when, you know, the organ can stand up with the guitar.
Totally,
toe to toe.
Yeah.
That's where you get John Lord.
Yeah.
We could do a whole show on him.
Yeah.
And full of examples of how great he was. And we lost him recently. But yeah. I
mean, yeah, it's a shame.
And it's a real shame because, you know, I would have liked to have heard him on the new stuff that they're doing.
Yeah, because I knew Deep Purple's pretty
it's good. Yeah, did it with Bob Ezrin here in town.
Yeah.
But
did he play keyboards?
I think wasn't he gone by that time? I don't know.
Bob Ezrin is a big keyboard producer. Oh, yeah. You know, did he play on Kiss stuff? Did he play on Pink Floyd stuff? I mean, did he play all kinds of stuff? Yeah.
Ezra probably played the piano part on Beth.
Probably. Yeah.
I'm assuming
that's what
he did.
I was thinking.
It wasn't
know?
Peter.
No.
No.
You know, and talk about Pink Floyd. What about Rick Wright? I mean, did you get into Pink Floyd or did you stick with the
heavier
stuff?
No, I was a Pink Floyd guy. Oh, I loved it. I remember cutting out of school and going to see the Pink Floyd at the Coliseum, that live, you know, doing acid with my friends in high school. And,
and
going down to the theater and sitting there and watching that thing 3 or 4 times in a row. And
what year are we talking about?
70. Well, it was right before I got my first synthesizer.
Okay.
So we're talking about 71, 72.
Cool.
You know. Mini Moog were basically the only thing that was commercially available as a synthesizer.
Yeah.
And Sam Ash was diagonally across the street from the movie theater, and so I was in the music store. And I would go over to the theater and watch the Pink Floyd movie, and
When it wasn't kind of a special thing to be a keyboard player in those days. Like, did you probably never wanted for a gig much?
Right?
Or were there a lot of people? Was it a chic thing to be a keyboard player at the time in rock bands?
No, it's always been a weird instrument as far as what, because it was an instrument that not every band had.
Right,
it wasn't an instrument that had to be in the band.
All right.
Yeah.
I gotta think when prog rock took off, it became more of
Then it became
thing.
Like Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
I'm not an ELP or a Yes fan, but for keyboard players, they're probably top of the heap.
And that was those were my high school years.
Yeah.
So
were you into all that?
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah.
I was Emerson. He was on my bedroom wall in high school.
Well, I mean, I don't discredit him as a player.
Course,
I mean, amazing player. I don't need 16 minutes on
it. I get it. Because I couldn't listen to it anymore.
Give it to me in 5 minutes or less, and I'm good. We were just talking last week with Luke about I don't need a 13-minute Iron Maiden song. It's just too much for me.
Right.
You know, like, don't bore us. Get to the chorus, you know.
It was a different. When I was 17 and testosterone was pumping through my body, and it was about how fast you could play and how many notes you could play.
Well, because it put the keyboard player center stage.
Yeah, that it did.
It makes you the star of the show.
Yeah. So I never really wanted.
You didn't?
No. See, to me, and I guess that's also the difference of how I look at keyboard players. I like the keyboard players that are the guys that are basically the equivalent of a rhythm guitar player.
Right.
You know, like people appreciate like Keith Richards' guitar playing because of his feel. It's not about his chops.
Right.
I like the guys that do that as opposed to the guys that could create the groove of the song, not necessarily play an 80,000 mile an hour solo.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the stuff that I like. And, you know, John Lord, if you listen to his organ parts, I mean, they're rhythm guitar parts.
Oh, they sure. They lock in with guitar parts. Yeah, he
that's
didn't.
That's why it all fits so
he didn't
good.
Go a million miles an hour. He would,
unless he wanted, you know.
He could.
Yeah.
But he always would hook back into what Richie mm-hmm. was playing.
It was musical.
Yeah. So it wasn't the equivalent of shredding on the guitar
right,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Which, but, you know, there's something to be said for that, too. It just. It's all sure. it's all dependent upon
sure.
taste.
Sure.
Well, with John Lord, it's the equivalent of having big, crunchy riffs on
right.
Well,
right. Like
AC/DC.
Yeah, we keep going back to it. But, yeah, he just... The guy could... I mean, Deep Purple could have almost sustained themselves without a guitarist because
mm-hmm.
of how he played. But
yeah.
it just made them that much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever get to see them back in the day live with him?
No, but I do have, like, I have videos from back in
yeah.
the day with him. And it just...
I can imagine live. It must have been just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, again, you know, it's all that, it's the organ. Again, it's down to the freaking Hammond.
And also, I hate to derail things. How the fuck are they not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
It makes no sense at all.
I don't. It's no, it makes
big,
absolutely no
it's
sense.
It's as
at all.
Big, if not a bigger crime, than Kiss
yeah.
not getting it for all those
well,
years.
Well, I'm going to say I might catch some hell for this.
It's a bigger crime.
Yeah.
It is. Deep Purple should have been in way before Kiss.
Yes.
But then Kiss should have been in way for a bunch of other bands that shouldn't even
mm-hmm.
be there, but. Let's not.
Come on, Public Enemy was
there.
Very influential on rock and roll. Come on. Bunch of bullshit.
Everybody should be
man.
In it. But, yeah. Yeah, but Deep Purple, and they're still not in it, right?
No,
no. That is
they
absolutely,
have to be next. And even Paul Stanley was like, Deep Purple has to go next.
Right,
come on,
yeah.
guys.
I think all three
yeah.
of us here
Deep
all
Purple,
agree. Deep
Purple, Cheap Trick, Judas
are.
Priest,
yes.
Iron Maiden,
mm-hmm.
even if I don't like their 13-minute songs, deserve to be.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well put, man.
Yeah.
Well put.
Sorry to get on my soapbox.
That's okay.
Right. So, but yeah, ELP and Yes.
Yeah, they hold a special place.
Yeah, I gotta figure.
And Rick Wakeman with his, you know,
oh
Six Wives of Henry VIII album was huge to me. When
yeah.
I, because not only that, you could open up the you know, it was a vinyl, and so
yeah.
it was a big 12-inch cover, and you could open it up and see his complete keyboard rig on the inside cover.
Which is
and,
massive. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I used to sit there in my, you know, bedroom and stare at that
right.
and listen to it.
So you didn't have penis envy, you had keyboard envy.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I just wrote that very statement to Derek.
Oh, did you?
The other day. He had a picture of his organ on
Derek
Facebook.
Shrinney?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said,
he's a great player,
I have
too.
Keyboard
yeah.
envy.
Yeah.
Because he just put together a really nice rig for, he plays play with Joe Bonamassa.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So I wrote that through. Yeah, beautiful Hammond, and you know he did it right. So
yeah, that guy's a monster player too.
Yeah,
yeah, he's played with everybody.
He's a,
yeah.
he's
yeah.
definitely one of the, you know.
Yeah, and he can.
He's a
chops. Yeah,
yeah chops
he'll fly all over that thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
He Dream Theater and everything.
Yeah,
yeah.
He also played with Yngwie.
Yeah, yeah. Played with Kiss too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a resume.
I doubt that he had to struggle much for Kiss's stuff though.
I bet you. Well,
he had to hold back. I mean, playing
yeah,
for Kiss, he
yeah,
probably wanted to go nuts.
That
yeah.
would have been the hard
yeah.
part for him.
Yeah.
That's gotta kind of be the hard part about
mm-hmm.
being a keyboard player. I mean, when you see that there's places where, you know, for example, we were talking about Paul Brown earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how we'd seen him with Dick Wagner, and Dick Wagner during that show gave him a whole part where he just
mm-hmm.
let him bust out what I
right.
call a you know, a mind blistering.
It was shredding on a
organ,
keyboard.
Yeah, a keyboard
right.
solo. It was amazing.
He was like a mad scientist or something.
There was a bunch of us that were standing there, we were rocking out, and all of a sudden this dude starts doing his thing, and I look around, everybody's eyes are wide open. They're
it
looking at
impressive.
Each other like, holy shit, look
yeah.
at this guy go, and he was awesome.
Well, because it's out of character to see
mm-hmm.
a keyboard
yeah.
player take over like that. You know,
especially these days.
Yeah.
Nobody allows it.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's got to be the toughest part for the keyboard player, huh? When you know there's times where you think, man, this would be a great place to rock it out, and then you just kind of got to...
No, I'm playing country.
Yeah,
so
see?
I get to do it,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
But,
with country music, is it just... Do you ever get a chance? Do they let you?
Oh, yeah. It's way more challenging keyboard technique-wise to
yeah.
play the stuff I'm playing now than Kiss.
Really?
It's probably not
oh,
much
yeah.
fun, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You know, for...
Don't worry, nobody that listens to country is
right.
listening to this.
No,
whatever
no, no,
you
no. It's just two different ways of playing. You know, the way I played when I played with Kiss, I was playing to not be heard.
Right.
I was playing to
beefing
make
up the
that
chord.
Sound bigger.
Right.
And not for, to be noticed as keyboards, just bigger sound.
Right.
To where every,
right.
Know. So, you know, that's completely different than playing piano and... you know, organ like I do with country. Right, you know, but country is basically because it's southern rock these days. So yeah, it's piano and organ again. Once again, it's piano and organ.
Right.
That's cool. What about Skynyrd? You love Skynyrd?
Love Skynyrd.
I bet you do.
Well, Billy Powell, an amazing player. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is he still doing it too?
He died.
Oh, he died. Did he pass away? Are any of those guys left? I don't know how.
Ian has gone on.
Gary Rossington's still around, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, I think he might be the last one. Or wow. Artemus Pyle's still around too.
Artemus isn't playing with him anymore.
No, he had to play with him a long time. But man, that's such a tragic story. But
oh gosh, yeah.
Oh yeah.
And Artemus too. I mean, the story, like, he not only survived the plane, but then didn't he get shot like trying to get help?
I don't know if he got shot, but he like had to go through swamps with alligators and shit just to get help.
And
go over barbed wire fences.
He came up on a farm and somebody shot him with a shotgun.
He went through hell just saving them. But yeah, he saved most of their lives that night. But
back in on the Hot in the Shade tour, those guys, anytime it was more than 400 miles, they would do a little plane.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do it.
You'd ride the bus.
Yeah, I used to ride the bus. I loved it.
Yeah.
And that was great to have the bus myself. Dang, I was a bigger rock star than
I don't even deal with you guys. I'll just ride the bus with the crew and hang out.
Yeah. Well, that was the way I learned, all the stuff that I had to know for the Cinderella tour, which immediately followed, I learned on Kiss's bus.
So you were kind of pulling double duty bands? Or you went from one to the other?
Yeah, right? I went to the other. I never did both at the same time, but yeah, that was how I was able to do it, because they'd fly and I would bring my keyboard up on the bus.
So you just don't like flying that much?
I don't really like it, and those little planes just suck.
Yeah, it seems glamorous until you get on one.
Until you try to get even your friggin' minivan with wings.
Yeah, it's like a tin can. Yeah.
You know, you're not talking about like G4s and shit. We're talking about like little twin props and shit.
Yeah,
like,
the Hot in the Shade tour, they weren't flying in G4s. No. They were flying on the Indians plane from Major League.
Yeah.
All five of you that listen will get that.
Right.
Movie from 30 years ago. Yeah. But, but Skynyrd, Billy Powell.
Yeah, great, great keyboard player.
Good player. Yeah. All right. So we move into the 70s. I was going to talk about, and this is not a keyboard player per se, but he played the part, Foreplay. Going into Long Time by Boston.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome.
And just a kick-ass part. And really unique. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't hear anything like that back in those days. It was...
Absolutely. And once again, that's all Hammond organ.
Yeah. Actually, Hammond M3, not B3.
Right.
I read up on that. Man. Yeah, because Tom Scholz could not afford a B3 at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it was
expensive.
Cool
now.
Yeah. And it was and I got to think, by the mid-70s, those things were in high demand.
Mm-hmm.
So they could jack up the price on them.
Except for one thing. We did actually skip over probably one of the greatest, most talented keyboard players ever.
Who's that?
John Paul Jones.
Yeah,
he did all that Zeppelin stuff.
Yes, he did. And you know what? The stuff that he's like the perfect example of like a guy who plays the stuff that glues it all together.
Oh, he's the unsung hero of the band.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
He's the guy.
You could almost listen to the stuff and not even realize that it is keyboard that's doing it. And that's the key to me of a great keyboard player.
Yeah. Well, he's probably, as much as I do love Jimmy Page and John Bonham, John Paul Jones is probably the most together musician in the band.
Mm-hmm.
For that keyboard stuff, and then also the bass playing stuff. Like, everybody talks about Geddy Lee, and he's great as a bass player, and Cliff Burton and everything, but man, John Paul Jones, listen to the bass line on anything, but on Ramble On alone.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of my favorites.
The shit that he's doing on that song is amazing. Mm-hmm. He carries that entire song.
Yeah.
Because if you take the guitar part for Ramble On, it's extremely simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much to it. He's doing everything in between and making that song what it is. Yeah.
He's doing all the work.
Yeah.
Have you got I got for my birthday this year the three new releases.
I haven't heard it yet. I've heard it was good, though.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, the alternate versions of the songs that, you know, from the albums that I've been listening to since they came out, you know, 40, 50 years, whatever. However long.
A long time ago.
I don't want to do the math right now. Throw me off and get all depressed. But, the alternate versions that come with it are unbelievable. To hear stuff that you're so familiar with for all that time and to hear these completely other versions.
Right.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Well, it's almost like you're sitting in the studio with them.
Yeah, and you really get a clear understanding of why they did certain things and why certain things happened the way they did. And it's really cool. But yeah, that John Paul Jones stuff. And, you know, he ended up doing a couple of tracks on the Cinderella on the Heartbreak Station record.
He did?
He did string arrangements on the song Heartbreak Station. Uh-huh. And then there's a song, it's the last song on the album. The song, the track that closes the record, it was called Wind of Change.
Yeah.
And it was funny because the first time I heard it, there was something about it that was really familiar to me.
Right.
And I couldn't put my finger on it. And I kept, what the hell, you know, why does it sound like something else? And it was a Zeppelin thing because I later found out that he had done the orchestration string arrangement on the song.
Nice. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. That's awesome.
So, and Jeff LaBar and Tom Kiefer, I know both are massive Zeppelin fans, so they must have been shitting themselves when he was there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got to meet Jimmy Page. We were on tour, on the Heartbreak Station tour.
Uh-huh.
We were staying at a hotel in Florida, on Miami Beach. Mm-hmm. And do you remember Steve Wood, which was Cinderella's tour manager back then? He was an Englishman.
Yeah.
And he worked with Larry Mazer, the
manager. Yeah, I remember him,
and
Larry Mazer kind of took you with him, didn't he?
Yeah. So Steve was like Larry's right hand, and so he would go out and be the tour manager for the acts that Larry managed pretty much at the time.
Right.
And so he had done something with Jimmy Page back in England. Mm-hmm. And so we were staying at this place in Miami Beach, and it turned out Jimmy Page was staying there as well. And Steve bumped into him in the lobby and said, listen, you know, guys that I'm out with are huge fans. Would you mind getting together with me and saying hello? And he was a real sweetheart. He said, no problem. Mm-hmm. He said, how about 4 o'clock this afternoon? Great. About 1:30, we get a call in my room from Steve saying, he just called me up. He's coming down now. He was going to take a nap. He couldn't sleep. He called me. He said, he wants to come over now.
Nice.
So we all ran over, you know, no problem.
Like little kids. Fucking Jimmy Page.
And this guy sat there and talked about Led Zeppelin and told us stories like a bunch of kids for like hours in Steve's room.
That's got to be like a highlight of your life.
Absolutely. Wow. It was unbelievable. And he just, you know, this is the same way we're sitting and talking now. He was sitting and very matter-of-factly talking about all that stuff.
I was going to say, it's too bad you didn't have one of these bad boys back then. You had the greatest podcast of all time.
I'll say you listen to that over and over again.
You just release the same one every week.
I know. Everybody downloads it again.
Yeah, but it was so cool to just sit there and listen to it. I haven't even said anything. I just listened, you know.
Oh, yeah. What do you do? Please keep talking. Yeah. I want to hear all of this.
Yeah.
No stories about mud sharks or anything, though, right?
No. No, those are all in the books.
Oh, yeah.
I read about that all day long.
So, yeah.
Right on. What else around that time? Anything else?
I don't think there's anything else that would be of interest. Well,
because we're back in rolling out of the 70s into the 80s, you know, and you said this where things kind of got weird.
Well, 80s is where it gets weird, because of synthesizers.
Well, speaking of that, let me ask you this. Are you a big Who fan?
Yes.
Bob O'Reilly?
Yes.
Now, is that a keyboard or a synthesizer?
Yes, synthesizer.
Okay, because that was
Both. It's piano in there too.
I always wondered what the hell that was was playing that. The opening,
that's a synthesizer.
That's incredible. I give Pete Townshend, because Pete Townshend's one of my picks.
That's a good one.
Because Bob O'Reilly is one of the greatest rock songs ever created. But I was like, I'm going to wait till Gary gets here and I'm going to ask him.
Absolutely.
What is that playing then?
It's an ARC 2600.
Oh, you actually know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I used to drool over every one of those synthesizers at Sam Ashman's.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
That's
cool.
So that line was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's what's called an arpeggiator on a synthesizer.
But it's really just a couple of things and it's looped, isn't it?
Yeah. All he had to do is hold down note. Well, I don't know how it was actually programmed on that keyboard, but, you know, it's not much different than the keyboard that I wrote the riff to Shebop on.
Oh, is it? Right. That's the same thing?
It's just me taking my hand off and stopping it.
Okay.
If you know, so that's how it happened.
Well, that was also one of my picks with Gary Cooper. I was going to talk to you about that, actually.
Well, we could talk about that.
Hey, like, I know Cyndi Lauper's not our usual demographic,
right?
But,
yeah.
But that's a very fucking iconic song. I mean, that was a big fucking hit, you know?
Yeah.
And especially that was a part of my childhood. I remember when that song came out. I remember when it was on the radio
Captain
constantly.
Lou Albano.
Oh, yeah. Cyndi Lauper was a big deal when I was a kid.
Did you ever get to meet Captain Lou?
No.
Oh, man.
I was a big wrestling fan. Like his era of wrestling.
Right,
when I was a kid.
How did you end up hooking up with her?
With Cyndi?
Yeah.
She was in Blue Angel.
Uh-huh.
And they had just done one album and broken up. And she was looking for a deal.
She was like a punk musician.
Yeah, and I loved Blue Angel. Blue Angel was
And they used to play at Coventry, where Kiss used to start out.
Yeah, I mean, they were. Yeah, it was just another club. And then, I tell you, that's an album worth looking up. On original
Blue Angel. I've never heard
of it. I think the single off of it was called Maybe He'll Know. They almost had like a 60s girl group sound.
Right.
Where she sang. And when the band broke up, she ended up having this manager named Dave Wolf. He was the guy that was her love interest in the videos all the time.
The Time After Time video?
Yeah, with the gray, skinny guy with the gray.
So that
gray
wasn't shirt. Really her boyfriend, that was her manager?
Well, they ended up getting married.
I was going to say, because in that video, they seemed like they were really a couple.
Yeah, they ended up becoming a couple and getting married.
See, I remember that video. I was like,
he booked that perfectly.
My early times of watching MTV, that video was on all the time.
Yeah, sure it was.
Yeah.
Well, somebody just sent me a text the other day that song, Rolling Stone just released some like top 100 singles of...
That one should be up there.
It was on the list.
It's not really hard rock by any means, but it's a great ballad, especially for that. Because that was, in my opinion, the early 80s were kind of a barren period for pop music. Like, I did not get into the whole new wave thing. I wasn't a big Cars fan and all that. Duran Duran.
I
kind of like Duran Duran.
Well, like, I have friends that, it all depends on when you went to high school.
Right.
Because, like, I have friends that went to high school then, and they're like, oh, that's the greatest period ever. And I'm like,
well, of course.
I'm like, that period sucks. I'm like, no. But I just did not like Gary Newman and all that. You know,
Thomas Dolby. Howard Jones.
It was just an odd period for music. But Cyndi Lauper put out some really quality material.
Well, because she's a great. She's still. I mean, she's
amazing singer.
Yeah, really good singer.
Yeah, and like I always thought her cartoonish image played against her as far as her talent.
I think it hurt her at the time.
Yeah.
I think it did because like, and I don't think the wrestling helped her.
No.
When she did it. Remember that girl Wendy Richter that she was the female.
It was all tied in with the wrestling. Yeah. She was challenging Moolah at WrestleMania.
Moolah. I haven't heard that name
in
years.
And Lou Albano was so involved in it. I mean, it was cool when he was in the videos, but for her to show up at the wrestling.
And... Right, because she was doing stuff with Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper and
I think it gave her like a quick shot in the arm publicity wise, but it hurt her talent being recognized. Mm-hmm.
Right.
People are like, oh, this is a goofy chick with weird hair.
Wrestling was kind of cartoony, and she tied herself
to that. Very cartoony,
became that also.
And it worked, but anytime you do something like anything, you do a novelty thing, novelties go away.
Right.
Right.
And you can't.
Yeah. You turn off a portion of the public.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's a great singer. I mean, very underrated singer by a lot of people. But yeah, she's put out good stuff. But yeah, so you started working with her back in the early 80s?
Well, I really didn't do much other than that song with her. What happened was, she was managed by Dave Wolf, and there was a guy who, I was in a band that was on Mercury Records as well, and we were getting ready to do our second record.
What was that called? What band?
Well, we'll get back to that. And
you were the Indian, or were you the?
No. I was the traffic cop.
Oh, okay. It's a cheap joke. I took it. I'm sorry.
But we were getting ready to do this record, and we were looking for a producer. Yeah. And the label put us in the studio with a couple of different choices.
All right.
And so we were in the I met this guy named Steve Lunt, who ended up not producing the record, but we ended up writing together. And so she was managed by him and by his same person that managed him. And so when we would write songs together, she would sing our demos, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so she came over to sing demos for us one night and heard the music track to She Bop and just went,
I want to do this.
Because she had just gotten her deal with Sony.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, let me write the lyrics. All it was a music track.
Right.
It was basically just sitting and screwing around with the arpeggiator on the synthesizer.
Yeah, because we asked you the last time about the song, and you made it clear you only worked on the music.
Absolutely. See, I stick with
it. Because the song's about, as Aaron said in the interview, flicking the bean.
That's right.
Well, that's where she came into the equation, and she took it and wrote the lyrics and...
Huge shit.
Yeah.
And then boom. And then you got mailbox money.
Yeah.
That's
that
good.
That time of the year again. But it's just, you know, that's, you know, the arpeggiator is the key to a couple of good riffs like that.
That's a cool, machine. Like I said, with Bob O'Reilly, it's, it's such an odd sounding thing, but it works so well. And like you'd have the loop thing going, and then the piano part comes in, and it's just three chords.
Yeah,
but it's three great chords, and that's I think that's one of the greatest rock anthems ever written.
And you got to watch that Quadrophenia.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Because he deals with a lot.
He goes into all
of it. He's in the studio, and it's a lot of Townsend explaining how it was all done. It's great.
Well, he's a fucking genius when it comes to arranging stuff and doing recording.
And to hear some of the personal stories that, you know, the crazy Keith Moon stories, like the first night of the Quadrophenia tour, he had done elephant tranquilizer and he passed out during the show. I mean, you know, just stuff like that.
Nice.
And it's stuff that, you know, I was in high school, so I remember.
Is there a drummer in the house? The Cow Palace, right?
Yep.
Yeah, San Francisco.
Yep.
And they had a fan come up and play with them.
And they actually have video of this.
I saw it recently, and I was like, I didn't know that it actually happened, like, that somebody actually got up and played
with them. It sounds like one of those urban legends.
No, this kid got up and finished the set for them.
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
I can do it.
Yeah, but apparently Keith Moon did Elephant Tranquilizer, and at first he came off behind the drums, and he was a fucking mess. And they got him to sit back down and play a couple more songs with him, and then they said he just turned to a jello. He just passed out, and he was hunched.
Oh, it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
It's like they have footage of him falling apart on the set.
Yeah.
It's just oh my God, because the guy was an incredible drummer, and like just watching him
completely wasted.
And just watching him just fall apart, and like you can see, and I think they cut to Roger at one point, he's just shaking his head, just like, what the fuck?
And then there's also a story on this thing about Daltrey and Townsend getting in a fist fight in the
studio. They never liked each other.
No.
To this day, they don't like each other.
But Daltrey actually knocked Townsend out.
That doesn't surprise me. Pete Townsend could be a pain in the ass,
I'm sure.
Sure
he could have been.
A very egotistical guy. But
again,
he's earned
genius.
It, too. Yeah, I mean, geez, some of the stuff that guy's written. So, yeah.
Well, they said that the Who, a lot of the Who... They felt like session musicians on that record because it was basically a Townsend solo project.
Right.
And he told them at what note, every note to play.
Yeah.
And they
was a bit of a dictator
for it, you know.
Yeah.
Which I can see as well. You know, we look at it as fans and you know, think, well, come on, he's Pete Townsend.
Turned out all right.
To them, he was just a guitar player.
Well, that's why I picked him, because it's like he's a guitar god, literally.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
But the keyboard
musical
stuff
genius.
That the guy did, like, or Who Are You, and or even his solo stuff, Let My Love Open the Door, and it's a cool keyboard part.
They're all Rough Boys, and that's that record,
he wrote some really good stuff. So,
cool. All right, how about Don Airey? You know Don Airey?
Ozzy,
Rainbow,
did Mr. Crowley,
Whitesnake.
Mr. Crowley's great.
Yeah, I love Mr. Crowley.
Yeah.
And of all the 80s ish, like with the stereotypical 80s keyboard stuff,
right?
His stuff was the coolest stuff ever. You know, yeah, like his synth sounds at least were like nice, warm, cool sound. He always had. Because that's what it became. It became all about the sounds that people use. Because all of a sudden, it wasn't cool to use the organ anymore. You know.
Yeah, the organ became very passé, especially by the mid '80s.
Like,
you're not gonna play that.
Yeah, nobody wanted to hear it anymore.
It didn't gel well with the flashy.
But the truth is, you know
and then
what?
You got Gary Corbett back there playing the organ with Poison dancing around you.
Talk dirty to me with John Lord.
So you're just standing there looking ominous, you know?
Yeah.
Totally out of place.
It's true, man. It's
nice.
But the organ always could stand up to the guitar. It's the sounds it's the synth sounds that just really...
Yeah. It lightened up quite a bit.
Yeah, because you got to think of some of that stuff,
well,
you know.
The,
and it,
the jump. Think of the jump synth.
That's
intro
what I
sound.
Think of. You know, that that's, was would have been another
Eddie
one of
Van
my
Halen
picks
did
was
change
Eddie Van
things.
Halen.
And I was gonna
absolutely.
I was gonna mention Eddie Van Halen was one of my picks.
You never understand
because
it,
I love I'll Wait. Like it's Van
right.
Halen doing a song with barely any guitar on
mm-hmm.
it,
but it's still,
and it works.
Yeah, that one does work.
That, well, that whole album, that 5150 album, is a great. Record.
Well, that's 84.
Well, even
yeah.
even
when it really started,
oh, yeah, yeah,
the last one with Rob, and actually.
Right,
yeah.
It was a big part of why Dave left, because Dave did not like
no.
the keyboard. And
but then he had Brett Toggle in his band.
He, well, that's,
yeah,
that's because
Toggle
he knew how the
stuff.
Times were changing and what Eddie opened the door to it.
Yeah.
And then Dave's like, I have to follow suit. But he did, him and Ted Templeman both did not want Eddie bringing that keyboard stuff into the band. They both were like, no, you're not doing it. And they dissuaded him for two albums. Like
mm-hmm.
he wanted to do the, he wanted to do Jump back in like 82. He already had the riff written.
Wow.
And Ted Templeman was like, no, we're not putting it on the mm-hmm. album. And Dave was like, I think Dave even threatened to leave if they put it on the album. And Eddie's like, no, eventually we're going to do this. And that's where the whole thing with Gene Simmons comes in and everything. With like
yeah.
Eddie showing up at while they're recording Creatures and playing them Jump.
Yeah. He really loved that song. He believed in it.
But
he knew it was going to be a huge hit.
The problem,
like, listen to this. It's so catchy. It's so simple.
It was so
it's like
different.
Shebop almost.
It is.
You know?
Well, it's a hook. It's definitely
a hook. Well,
and
it
it's
was
unmistakable. You'll recognize it.
But the
it.
Thing is, whenever you hear it, you hear the 80s.
Well,
right.
But that's the thing with any extreme success. I mean,
yeah.
you think about any. Think about spandex.
Right.
At the time,
well,
it was the coolest thing. You know, for
you
people
mean it's
that,
not cool anymore?
But now people are going to make fun of it because it was
oh,
so extreme.
I like
you
my
know?
Biker shorts.
I got to go change now.
Yeah. you know, bicycle shorts.
Yeah.
You know,
with fluorescent things. Colors.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't like that in the 70s. It's like you don't picture, you know, a certain sound like you think of John
mm-hmm.
Lord, you know, but nobody, you know, other guys sort of sounded like that, but there were so many different styles, you didn't just pen it down
yeah.
to one, but in the 80s, it's all kind of becomes the
it
same.
Got very
yeah.
homogenized.
Yeah.
yeah.
But that's what I grew up on, so.
Yeah,
there's
see,
some,
that's
there's
that's
some,
a hard
there is
one.
Some great stuff hidden in amongst
mm-hmm.
all that, though,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
guys
to
like,
think.
Like Paul Taylor. You know,
yeah, from Winger.
The stuff he did with Winger. You know, Winger's not known as a big heavy band, or you wouldn't think, but he, as a songwriter and some of the stuff he did in Winger, I don't know. Chris is starting to kind of turn me over to it a little bit.
I've tried. I was into all of that shit because I was like 11, 12 years old.
Right.
And
yeah, right.
Twisted Sister opened the door with the We're Not Gonna Take It video.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was that anybody that's 11 is gonna get into
but,
it.
But yeah, exactly. But that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. And that's extreme, right? And that was as huge as you could get. But now you look at it, and it,
well,
it it's a little goofy.
It's goofy.
Because
yeah.
it was extreme.
Yeah, but I still love it.
You know, but it's better
like,
to
yeah.
be extreme and, you know,
right.
to take a shot at it than
but,
to just be.
But with Eddie Van Halen doing, you know, Jump and I'll Wait and. He really, I mean, he ushered in a whole new era
mm-hmm.
with that stuff.
Yeah.
Guitar playing and keyboards. You kind of have to pin the blame on him for a lot of
a
that
lot
stuff.
Of it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
He
there's
changed
there's
it all.
Perfect
it's all Eddie Van Halen's
he's
fault.
The father
it's a freaking guitar player's fault. They're rooting for us freaking keyboard players. Right? So that's basically what it all boils down to.
Wow.
Freaking guitar player
thanks,
rooting
Eddie.
For us. Yeah, thanks, pal.
I mean, but there's some good players that have been, like Todd Howarth. You know,
from
Frehley's Comet.
Yeah.
He did some pretty cool stuff, and that's kind of like enhancement stuff, like you were saying, you know?
Well, that's a, but that's when it became, like, the keyboard player had to be hidden. When it, you know, when they, all of a sudden, it went from the keyboard player is half of the groove mm-hmm. to now the keyboard player is an embarrassment. We should put him behind the stage.
But that was late 80s, though.
Yeah.
Well,
when that started.
When they were
yeah.
trying to do it.
But, like...
Yeah.
One of like another one.
Oh, we're
like,
not there yet.
Did you, ever, did you ever like?
We'll
did you
there.
Ever get to the moment? I was well, okay.
Okay.
Can we get to the moment? Can we just get to it?
Yeah,
I was
running.
So when you got with Gene and Paul, did you mm-hmm. ever? Did it ever occur to
oh,
you that
no.
you might occur be on stage with the band?
No, not with those guys.
No,
no,
they
because
they
you know what? I was a realist.
Never
I'm,
asked if you
yeah.
were Vinnie Vincent making.
No, there was not.
Yeah.
A, there was not a chance in hell that it would ever happen in Gene's world.
Yeah.
But you know what? I wouldn't. To be honest with you, I don't know that I would want to be that guy.
You know what? And I never really appreciated the keyboards in Kiss. You know, but I know that's the album.
That
stuff,
was the whole idea.
Know?
If it was to not
right,
know,
I know,
you know
it was all Bon. You know, Dave Bryan.
That's
you know,
what I was about to get to.
Bon Jovi.
Dave's
you know?
Dave Bryan is one of my
favorite keyboard
player. He's a great keyboard player.
Because I will put it forth. I'll be inserting music throughout as I edit this. The intro to the song "Let It Rock" from the Slippery Wooden Run.
Yeah,
well,
that's
yeah.
fucking
that
awesome.
Cool. Yeah,
that's
kind of falls in
but
line
that's a,
with
that's
like the final.
It's got an organ
yeah.
sound,
yeah,
which
yeah,
made
yeah.
it work.
That was the '80s version of that was like the DX7 organ
right.
patch. You know, like rock organ in,
right.
in the DX7. So
yeah.
it kind of like was is organ-ish.
Organ-ish.
But the stuff he plays on that is
oh yeah, yeah,
cool.
yeah. Absolutely.
It's a great way to open an album.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if he would have done that same thing on John Ward's rig with
yeah.
the real organ,
right?
It would have sounded
really
a lot tougher.
Okay, so you weren't a big fan of the changeover to the more synth sounding.
No, at the time I was.
So at the time you liked
yeah,
it,
yeah.
but it's more of in hindsight,
just,
like, well, maybe
money.
This wasn't
there's
the right
to be
no,
made
actually,
there.
But I shouldn't say it at the time I was. At the time I used it because that's what
that was
people
in
were
vogue.
Using.
Yeah.
I never thought it was better. And I you know what? Like I said, Dave Bryan played great stuff, and his parts still stand up.
I still respect Bon Jovi for being willing to put a keyboard player out front
absolutely.
Like that back in those
absolutely.
Early days.
That's true.
Not
right.
so,
he was a true member of the band.
Although,
oh, totally.
Once 1990
totally.
And further went, though, that not so much.
Well,
he's
but
been,
he still shares business-wise.
Yeah,
and
he's still up there on the stage.
Part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I, you know what? That's one gig as a keyboard player that,
yeah.
you know, is a good one. And, you know, we spent
yeah.
a lot of time with Cinderella, to, you know, together. So me and
yeah.
Dave...
Yeah, what's he like?
He's a great guy.
Because you always hear about Don and Richie, you never hear about David. Anymore.
Well, David was a very fun guy, and he was very... Well, he's doing, like, Broadway shit now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's got a show on Broadway that's really successful.
Wow. So he's been wise with his money.
Yeah. And plus, creative in other ways,
right.
too, you know? I mean, just like Cindy's got a Broadway, that Kinky Boots on Broadway is Cindy Lauper's
right.
show, and it's, you know, she won, like, Tony Awards and shit. But Dave has a Broadway show that he wrote the music for and stuff. So he's a great musician. He always, you know, he was a piano lesson. We had very similar childhood backgrounds
right.
and stuff. So we got, you know, both, you know, got along very well.
Yeah.
And very similar.
Right. Well, he's from Jersey too, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right on.
Well, cool. But yeah, so especially that Slippery When Wet album,
mm-hmm.
the keyboard was
great
very,
stuff.
Very heavily prominent in
that
album.
One and New Jersey, both
yeah,
of those.
Yeah, both of those albums had a lot of keyboard
mm-hmm.
on them. So I give them credit for that.
Mm hmm.
Yeah.
Right on. A guy
I know you're not the biggest Bon Jovi fan.
No, I'm not. But I like bands like Enough's Enough. You know,
yeah.
Enough's
oh,
Enough had some Donnie V out there playing
absolutely.
Piano. You know,
Chip and Donnie were freaking amazing. Duo, the amazing team together.
Yeah.
Should have been huge.
Should have been.
I don't
Should've
know why.
Been.
I never understood it.
I still speak to him, and I still...
To Donnie or
Chip?
Chip.
Yeah.
Chip's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great bass
cool.
player.
Yeah.
Great
good musician. Yeah.
He's doing all the music for the Man Cow show.
Is he? Yeah, I know he's buddies
yeah,
with that guy.
They're doing some special show in Chicago.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
yeah.
He
that's
does,
good.
So he does the music for
I'd
him.
I'd love to have them come down to Nashville. So yeah, they
with the full band.
With
you know,
but Donnie
jumped ship. He's, there's a whole lot about him out lately. He's actually
mm-hmm.
been in Tennessee lately. But
oh, has he really?
Yeah, we'll talk off air about that. Yeah,
really?
It's not a good story.
No, I've never heard anything good.
He's up to old tricks. Yeah.
Great keyboard player, though.
Yeah.
Come up with some really beautiful stuff on
all this.
Mm-hmm. He's almost more like a kind of like an Elton John kind
mm-hmm.
of guy when they incorporate the piano into what
yeah.
they're doing.
When
you know, keyboard.
Their last album, I don't know if it was the last one that they did for Arista, but it was at the end of the it was early 90s when the 80s was dying.
Right.
They've been Animals.
Yeah, and they were doing a record in New York for Arista.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it ever even came out, but I you know, that's when I first became friends with Chip, and I went to the studio,
yeah.
invited me down, and I remember here and really like being excited to buy the record when it became
right.
available, and not ever being able to hear it again.
Wow!
Because it, you know, now I every time I bump into Chip, it's like, dude, I want a copy of that fucking record.
Yeah,
and, yeah bro, I can't hear.
Yeah, you sound just like him.
Yeah.
But the that they're one of the biggest mysteries in music history, because it's like, how the fuck were these guys not a massive success?
They almost were. They did. They had that one, the first single, well, when Real Thing came out.
Yeah, New Thing, yeah, and then whatever, Fly High, Michelle was a kind of hit. But that after that album, it just sort of, just didn't happen. For, well, the grunge came in as well.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But they were not marketed correctly.
No. They got painted all
wrong.
They got
painted up with all the fucking glam shit, and that should have never been the case.
It was the time. They were trying to jump on the poison.
You could tell. It hurt them, though.
It did hurt them, because people could look at them
and see.
They
were a real band.
They could see that's not what you really are, and they just couldn't get behind it.
They did not need to play the game. They were good enough on their own.
They should have just came out as themselves.
They really.
They could have maybe rode the wave into grunge, you know. They could have.
Oh, they wrote incredible music. It's Howard Stern backed them. David Letterman backed them.
Yeah, I remember when Howard used to have my old time.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, why are these guys not massively huge? It lacks explanation.
I can never understand. They're so good, but yet all the listeners didn't go buy it. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Who else you like? Who else you like?
Let's see, who else I like?
I got one that'll piss Gary off.
No, nobody's gonna piss me off today.
Well, from the 80s period of the sound you don't like, Mick McKelly from Europe for the Final Countdown.
As soon as you say it, you know it. It rings in your head. You know it. It's the line.
That's the stereotypical.
Well, it's considered a joke these days.
Yes.
But when it was brand new, I loved that song.
But still, people hear it and it connects with them. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those.
It's part of my childhood.
I don't really have a problem with it. I'm just joking around. But I mean, I don't know him as a musician. You know,
yeah,
remember the band?
But bigger overseas than here. That album was really it for them. That and the next one. That was it.
But that's not going to happen. You know, that was a big anthem.
Huge anthem, yeah. It was that. In 86, that was a big song.
That organ, analog synthy trumpety horn.
That's what I'm saying. That's like the antithesis of what you like.
Yeah, pretty much is.
I can see why.
And I remember, it has its place.
I remember typing it up, and I'm like, Gary's not going to like this one.
I definitely go for the more... blending in and
What about a band like Faith No More?
I liked them at the time.
Yeah, because I know they got that guy Roddy Bottom, and he adds a lot to it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of sound going on that I don't know if it came from him, but I mean, I know they also use piano, and anybody that can fit piano in a rock band, my hat goes off to, because that's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you know, you
do not have to sound pompous and stupid,
right?
You know that.
Because it's a hard blend when it's piano and guitars and bass and drums. And
it's one thing if it's pop, you know, piano, but to make a piano rock, you gotta... I give people credit if they can do it.
Right, yeah, I suppose, man. It's like you say, you gotta have that power to stand up with the guitars, you know, and stand up along with them.
You know, we skipped over. We skipped over a couple of, but that, you know, kind of crossing into the southern rock thing would be the Allman Brothers, Greg Allman.
I was gonna, I was thinking about Greg Allman.
We might have to this might have to be a two-parter too, because there's just I don't want to like piss anybody off by leaving somebody great out, and I know that as soon as I get in my truck to go home.
We will.
Shit, you know, I forgot.
Don't feel bad. We do that every week.
It happens to me every time.
Yeah. So I'm gonna before anybody gets too mad, I'm just gonna say that if anybody got left out, it's you know, just I'm old. My memory's
Gone. Yeah, of course. I mean, there's so many. There's so
and we'll
many.
Come back and we'll talk about it next time or something. Let's see. I'll come up with somebody good. How about Uriah Heep? We're going back to the
70s. I don't know much about them. They're a band that like I've had friends tell me I should get into, but I've never listened to much of their stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely... they were great. Easy Living.
Oh,
well, God gave rock and roll to you. Oh, that was Argent. But that whole era, there's another one.
Yeah.
Hold Your Head Up. I mean, come on, talk about an organ song.
All right. That's true.
Phew, they seem that glad we thought of that.
Although, I remember Roundabout getting played on the radio quite a bit.
Sure. And that was a great organ heavy sound and like the verses of that song.
I've always been convinced that they were massively baked when they played that song.
Oh, they had
recorded
to be.
It because it's just so nuts.
Yeah,
it's,
that whole record
most likely
Fragile. That whole album Fragile was a great record. They just played the...
The Skarmorn or...
Ryman recently.
Ryman. What about Phil Ashley?
I love Phil Ashley. Come on now. That's the guy that... I mean, really, touring-wise, he got me the Lou Gramm gig.
Right.
And the Kiss gig.
You still talk to him?
No. I lost time. I have no idea where he
is. I haven't seen anything about him in a long time.
The last thing I heard... and it wasn't that long after that time, he had gotten involved with a few people. They bought a studio, and they were doing like radio advertising, jingles and stuff.
Really?
And I did a Dunkin' Donuts commercial.
For wow. Him. Hey, yeah. Money's money, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did Martha Stewart commercials for a couple of years, too. Yeah.
Nice.
So how about Trent Reznor?
Love it.
Guys like that.
Well, you know, I mean, again, that's all synthesizer.
Right.
That's, you know, but that's now technology. See, the thing is, back in the 80s, the technology of synthesizers was pretty new.
Right.
And so now, I mean, there's no limitations on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, they were a nightmare to use as a, like, live. They, you know, they were a nightmare. They drifted, you know, they would never stay in tune.
Yeah.
Now, at least you can rely, like, the band will turn around to the keyboard player for an A when it's time to tune, you know?
Yeah.
Because they know that the keyboards are... But back then, how many times I would be playing one keyboard and then have another synth for a solo, and come time for the solo and you hit that first note, and it's like... And they didn't have memory, you know, there was no memory, so like from one song to the next,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like a one button change. You had to turn knobs and plug in things and remember what changes needed to happen from one song to the next.
Wow.
So they weren't real convenient to you.
Yeah, they're kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah, so, you know, then the 80s came along, and also the early synths, you could only play one note at a time.
Right.
You couldn't play chords. So it was basically a melody instrument,
right?
Or a soloing instrument. It wasn't anything that you could play a string.
You created, right. But you didn't really play it. You hit play on it.
Well, no, you could play it, but you could only play one note. You couldn't play the whole chord.
Oh, so you just single note,
It was just a melody instrument.
Yeah.
As opposed to like chord, you couldn't play a chord on it.
Right.
And so it wasn't until the Prophet 5 was the first polyphonic synthesizer that allowed you to play more than one note at a time.
Hmm.
And so that was like Steve Winwood, Ark of the Diver, like when you see a chance, take it. You know, that sound.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was huge back then. That was a big deal.
Prophet 5.
Worked out well for him in the 80s, mm-hmm. did it? Jeez, he had mm-hmm. a real run. He had the Spencer Davis Group and Blind Faith, and then kind of nothing for a few years. Then the 80s come in, and he just fucking exploded. It was he was all over the place. Roll with it, and then
yeah.
Was it Valerie? Was that one song? Yeah, he had tons of hits back in those days. Yeah. Well, so the mid 80s. I know you weren't crazy about the sound change, but it was pretty damn steady work for a keyboard player back then.
Yeah. Well, because it was all so new. You know, MIDI was a new thing, and computers being used was a new thing. And I worked a lot because of that. And it was exciting. It was really exciting to be a part of it. It's just that, you know, like anything, when it's, you know, at its, you know, when something's being invented, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, gets thrown out.
Whatever happened with MIDI anyway?
Well, it's still being used, but now, you know, they no longer, most of the time, they don't use the same connection anymore because they use USB. Just like, because you were connecting MIDI, you were connecting the keyboards to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So now USB is a much more universal way to connect to a computer.
It's all done through that now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like the professional keyboards, like the Yamaha key, like the stuff I use, when you buy it, it'll have the MIDI outs and ins that they always had, the 5-pin, but it also has a USB.
Yeah. Hmm. What do you think about bands that are triggering like background vocals from a keyboard? Have you had much experience with that?
Yeah, I did with Kiss.
You did?
I did background vocals on half of the songs that we played.
So would they take the studio tracks and then put them in on keys, or they would record them?
Because they tuned down a half step.
So they'd record them at soundcheck or whatever?
No, we actually go into the studio at the beginning of the tour.
And do it down half step.
Yeah, we pitch down half a step. And they also didn't make it perfect. Like, they were going to... They were smart about it because they...
To make it sound natural.
Yeah.
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 They were just... It was just controlled. So if they didn't like the take, they'd do it again.
Right.
But once they got a good take, it was... We used to do... We would stand around the microphone, like, as a group. Sing... Everybody sang their parts. Then they would make that one side and then double it. And that was... And that's what I said. I would take that, put it to a DAT tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd leave the studio, and I would... That's what I would sample for the tour. So when it happened live, it was actually them really singing, and it was not like, you know, 18,000 voices. It just and so it sounded right.
Were there moments where things didn't get triggered the right way, or at the right time?
Well, yeah, there was one time in all the years I did it that there was a really bad one.
Was it with Kiss?
Yeah.
They were looking for
God of Thunder and Forever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had the Forever vocal instead of I Am the Lord of the Wasteland.
Yeah. What was the Forever vocal? That came out during God of Thunder? Holy shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What do you remember? What tour stop that was?
No.
there's definitely not a tape of that because it would have leaked by now.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was awesome. And the thing was, the Forever vocals, to Paul's credit, I had it purely for emergencies because it was like a really high part.
Yeah, although he did it himself most of the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I only had it as a just in case he was sick or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't anything I used every night.
Right.
But the God of Thunder stuff was.
Was the whole...
Yeah, the like harmonized...
Harmonizer thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to create it, all I did was just like the samples, when we were in the studio doing the vocal samples, Gene, just like he did it in the studio, did it in his regular voice.
Right, and then you add...
And then we ran through a harmonizer.
Sure.
So that's all it was. So without the harmonizer, it just sounded like Gene.
Gene's like, I am the Lord of the Wasteland.
Yeah, I am the Lord of the
Wasteland. This is Gene Simmons from Kiss. I am the Lord of the Wasteland.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to cut that first part out.
But this one night, you know, the Sphinx opens up and Gene, you know, the theme's coming up, the smoke's going up.
I remember I was there.
They had the scream with the thing in the mouth.
Looked like the voice thing.
And so basically the output of my sampler ran through the thing that... The mouth, so it would make the mouth look like it was talking.
The Sphinx starts singing Forever.
Oh man!
Now the thing is, you know, I was training with on keys, so I as soon as I took my hand off, so it didn't take long.
Yeah.
It was like, now it's all.
You know. Oh, I bet you got some looks from those guys.
Oh, Gene. Well, you know, Gene Paul. You know, Paul didn't give a shit, but Gene kind of looked at me.
What the fuck?
But then he was smart enough to, because he's been around.
Yeah, he knows how to play the game.
He knows how to make the mishaps get covered. Yeah. And he just did it, Mike.
I bet you heard about it a couple hours later.
No, surprisingly.
I'm surprised because usually they're like all over somebody's ass for screwing up.
But the truth is, you know what? I did that for them for 6 years.
Yeah.
And that's the only mishap.
That's pretty
and
good.
And you gotta realize, we didn't play to a click.
Yeah.
Eric Carr was not the machine of a drummer that, you know.
Nice.
And so, which is part of the reason why, like, if it was one chorus, I would have to split it up over a bunch of keys because it would be like a, I'm trying to think of a chorus, to give you an example. Because I would, depending on the night, if Eric was playing a little faster, that, you know, I would have to play them on top of the beat and so that, but they didn't play to a click, so that's it. So there was still a human element triggering the samples.
Yeah, the majority of what you heard was live.
Yeah.
Although it's different than like Motley Crue these days.
Yeah, those people are just running tapes.
I was going to say, have you seen how much they're using? Yeah. The majority of what you're hearing is not live.
And that to me is...
Do you think that's cheating?
I don't know where the line is, and... I get, you know, there's so many different ways of looking at it. You know, there's the thing of it's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it makes it a better show, is it wrong? I don't know.
I think only if it's your final tour. Only if it's your final tour is that okay. Because you're going around that last big run telling all the people this is our final tour, this last time you're going to get to see us.
So we're gonna
it won't be very good if we come out there and just do it as we are, you know, because we're getting pretty old. It's time to hang it up, you know. We know that. You need to accept that, that's too. Good. So in order for us to give you what you expect, we're going to add the tapes, we're going to add all that. You're going to come in and say, the last Motley Crue show I ever seen was awesome, and everybody goes home happy, and we never do it again.
All right.
Perfect. That's right. The only time it's okay.
I like that.
If you're an up-and-coming band, you don't do that shit.
No, you don't have to do that shit.
If you're a band that's still out there and you got something to prove, you don't do that
God,
shit.
God, well, how hard of a job...
But if you're on your way out the door,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, how hard of a job is it for the guy that has to trigger all that shit? Jeez.
I suppose it's probably all on a computer. It is. Hit start, days, and hit stop.
Yeah, because everybody plays to a click these days, too. Even the country band I play with, we play to a click.
Of course. It's new age country, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the warts and all approach. I mean, yeah.
I do too.
Just
I'd rather
playing.
Play.
Yeah, it's like...
Everything's in ears.
Either you like it or you don't, you know?
Right. It makes you feel something.
I've heard a friend of mine just got to go on stage while Metallica was playing, and
mm-hmm.
he said, thanks to the whole in-ear monitor thing, it's the last place you want to be. Because mm-hmm. you don't hear anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you would just hear... the strings jangling and you hear them screaming into the mic, but the band's hearing all the monitors. You don't even hear anything from the monitor. It's just like nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's no stage volume anymore.
So like you can like have a conversation on stage with somebody at normal volume.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be odd.
Yes. Well, and the thing is, if the guitar players are usually the last guys to accept that.
Right.
Like with Cinderella.
Yeah,
because
you want to hear it.
Yeah, and you want to hear your amp. You don't want to hear it.
Yeah, you don't want to hear it through your ears.
Yeah,
how much low end are you going to hear?
Yeah, that was bothering the shit
out
of me.
You're not. You're not going to get any of the warmth that your speaker cabinet gave you.
It's going to sound all tinny.
So guitar players are the last guys that you know. Like with Cinderella, Jeff and Tom would never use them.
Yeah.
Fred used them. Eric jumped on board. And because it makes it easier for... the monitor guy.
Sure.
Fuck the monitor guy. You know, right. It's like, is life easier?
He's not the one up there playing.
Yeah. You know, and
that's what he makes the big bucks for.
Yeah.
Well, before I let you go, is there mm-hmm. is there anything on the horizon for Cinderella that you know of?
No.
I know Tom's done the solo thing for a while, but
yeah.
and Jeff's got a solo album out now.
I don't even know.
But I didn't know if you ever know of anything. I hate that. Those guys need to put another album together.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, I've been talking with Mark. Mark's been, you know, Slaughter's been talking to me about his solo record.
Yeah. Are you going to tour with him?
Well, apparently there's a lot of keys on it.
Yeah.
But I didn't play them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't have any attachment to it. But, he's talked to me a few times about it, that if there's any live stuff to be done.
Hey, watch out. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be out on the road, I know a guy who can play whatever it is. You know, give him a call.
Yeah, I might end up doing it. I'm also working with Megan Ruger, who was on The Voice this year.
Yeah, I know her. She's from Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. You know Megan?
Yeah, from wrestling.
Yeah.
She came down and sang the national anthem, did an awesome job.
She's a great singer.
Yeah, she is.
So we just had lunch yesterday, and I'm going to drag a couple of the boys into the studio for her.
Cool.
See what we come up with.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I always thought she could do something.
Well, I didn't catch it, but apparently she did pretty good on The Voice.
Yeah.
And we just played last Tuesday night at the 12th and Porter.
Yep. Right on.
That's mm-hmm. cool. Well, we got to drag you out to Dan McGinnis to do this whole rock and roll residency
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah, I'm going to call
Phil
Schaus.
Talk to Phil and come up there and play with those guys.
Yeah, so it's a fun
you guys should do some Deep Purple stuff or something.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd love to hear you guys do Highway Star or something like that. You
this
know.
One's for the Decibel Geek podcast. Rocking it out.
So we'll get you on there. Well, oh man, glad you got to come out and do
Absolutely.
This again. Man.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
Now we
got
to think of another excuse how to get
know.
Back.
I know. Back, so.
We'll come up with something.
I know we'd drag a couple of Kiss stories out of you. That's fucking priceless having forever come out of the...
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Oh, gosh, too. I found the samples, too. I have, you know, I still have boxes of them. Because,
oh, do you?
You know, like, back then, first of all, crashes happened all the time.
Right.
And there was no hard drives yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, to have backup of what you did, like... What I used to do is at the beginning of the tour, I would make like 10 sets of the. They were the 1.25-inch, I mean, the 3.5-inch floppy disks.
All right.
That held 1.4 megabytes of information on
wow.
it, right?
Dang.
And so,
Technology.
Yeah. And so it would be like 10 discs in a box, and I would duct tape it and put a skull and crossbones on it and tape it shut, and I'd hand them out to everybody. I'd hand them out to the production manager so that they'd be in different locations.
Right.
God forbid one case gets lost and they're all in one drawer.
You want to be covered, yeah.
Right.
And so I say I'd give one to the truck driver. I'd give one, you know.
Hold on.
And that's how I used to do it. But
if you ever lost one, you just go down a lot. You got yours. You got
exactly.
yours. You got yours.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's smart.
Thinking.
But you know, nowadays you just store it to the cloud. But I'm so old school. I don't trust it. Like it's I don't trust.
Oh yeah, no.
Well,
you know, trust the cloud.
You'll lose your samples, and you'll have naked photos of yourself spread everywhere.
The Sphinx mouth opens, and there's a naked picture in Gary. Oh no!
Oh gosh.
Oh jeez.
So there you have it. As promised, our awesome conversation with Gary Corbett. Yeah, I said it. We're working on getting him back on again as soon as possible.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks again to Gary for coming on. Not only a great musician and a great guest, but he's been a great friend to us through this, and we can't thank him enough. He's a super cool guy.
I guess we'll have to do like a Elms Unleashed on She's So Unusual or something.
That's an idea. The listenership might drop a tad, but yeah.
No, everyone will still love it because it's Gary Corbett.
Yeah, it was fun to have him on, and you know, keep up with Gary. We'll put links in the show notes and everything.
Most definitely.
So before we go, fall is here. That you can get a long sleeve hoodie with Decibel Geeks logo on.
There's
it now.
All kinds of stuff you can get, mugs and hoodies, and yeah, like you say, it's fall time
and,
coming up.
Yeah, we're working on alcohol glasses. We're working on that right now, and shot glasses. And,
oh yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, so I'm working out the logistics, but we're trying to make it work.
Put my Crown Royal in it.
Exactly. Thanks, Baco.
Yeah. Speaking of Baco and the Meister and Gator and all the guys over there and girls over at the Decibel Geek official website, you know it, www.decibelgeek.com. That's where all these amazing writers, I mean, it's more than just a podcast. Yeah, we're here every week with a brand new show for you. But if you're not aware of the website, you're missing out on a big piece of the action, because it's an amazing, there's really not too many websites like it, because it's not reporting the news to you per se, but it's more, you know, album reviews, concert reviews, you know, just individual stories from different writers telling about all this awesome rock and roll. So if you're just listening to the show and not going to the website, you're only getting a part of the experience.
Yeah, it's other stuff, and it's basically articles by fans for the fans.
We're not looking
to win a Murrow Award for journalism. We just want to relay really cool stories about really cool music.
I just want to win a Metal Edge magazine award. Do they still give them away?
I don't even know if that's Metal Edge magazine's even around anymore.
We could print ourselves up one. Number one podcast, Metal Edge 2014.
That's not pretentious at all. Oh,
well,
man.
While you're at the website, you know, here's a really important thing to know, because Christmas is coming up. You got to be thinking ahead of time about getting your Christmas gifts and doing all your shopping. You know, sometimes you don't got to wait till Christmas. You want to get something good for yourself right now, and you want to get it from Amazon.com. They've got a little bit of everything. And the best thing about Amazon is they help out us here at the Decibel Geek Podcast. We need more technical money. Chris was just telling me earlier we're going to have to dish out some more cash to be able to get the show up on time because of technical logistics that I just don't understand. But, you know, it's one of those things. We've got to keep the lights on. So you go to Amazon, you buy what you were going to buy. You don't got to buy nothing special. You know, you get whatever you want to get. But by doing it through the Decibel Geek website page, you're giving a kickback to the show by Amazon. They're giving it to us by you going through us to get to them.
Yep.
See, it's a beautiful thing. And if you're getting us on iTunes, I know a lot of people download us on iTunes, take them with us to work and on the ride to work and all that good stuff. If you're doing that, stop by and give us a review. We love those 5 stars.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we've been low on iTunes reviews lately, so yeah, we'd appreciate that.
The ones that are on there are fantastic.
Oh, it's amazing stuff.
When I'm feeling down in the dumps, I read our iTunes reviews. Makes me feel good again.
It's better for you than cold gin, too.
Yeah.
All right, so we got to get out the door.
We got some cool stuff coming up. We'll see you right back here next week for more Decibel Geek Podcast.
See ya.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.